We would like to thank Karen and Jake Abelovitz for sponsoring this morning's Lachslomer and Le'ilui Nishmas. Jake's both parents, Le'aben Abba and Le'aben Sivram, and Karen's brother, Yoshua and Shimon Dov. Their neshamas should have an aliyah, as well as to Judy and Laser Michli for sponsoring in loving memory of Judy's beloved parents, Peretz Ben Svi, Peretz Goldenberg, and Sprinza Bas Avram Pinchas, Cecilia Goldenberg, on the occasion of their yurtzeits. And neshamas should have an aliyah. We are in the middle of the first brisa in the sixth chapter of Pirkei Avos. This is our third shiur on the topic, and it looks like we're not even going to finish today. There's just too much to accomplish and too much to do. If you recall, the basic overview of the brisa is as follows. Rabbi Meir tells us that if you learn Torah Lishma, you merit many things. The first shiur we spoke about was just what does Torah Lishma mean? And we gave several different possibilities. The second shiur, which was last week, we began by doing the first five of the approximately 15 different things that are listed here in the Brisa. So we spoke about the connection between being beloved, called a friend, loving God, loving people, making God happy, making people happy, and that interaction pattern between those two spheres of relationships that we have, and the direction of happiness and love and friendship that learning Torah, Lishma, for the sake of, let's just say for the sake of the right reasons, however we define those, will be able to accomplish. Today, the goal is to get through, let's go with another five or so on this list of things that come along with learning Torah Lishma, but it could be we'll even get to less of them depending on how detailed we get as we go along. But first I wanted to discuss an outstanding idea that, and by outstanding, I mean both in the sense that it is outstanding, as well as we said we're going to do it last week, so it is outstanding in terms of time period of when we're going to do it, which was something that Freda brought up, the idea based on this line that I'm highlighting over here, that somebody learns Torah Lishma, the whole world is worth it for this person. And that is related to an idea that she mentioned she heard, and it is actually rooted in something that Rav Chaim Volozhiner wrote on this Mishnah. And it is, for those who are keeping track, I don't think I realized this last week when it was brought up, but it was actually this past week was Rav Chaim of Volozhiner's 200th yurtzeit. So he died 200 years ago this week. And there was a push to learn more of his Torah, so this is a good opportunity to take advantage of that. We spoke about him 2 weeks ago as well, as he was the subject of Rabbi Norman Lamb's book, Torah Lishma, which we used to bring out the ideas of what the Lishma for the sake of is within our discussion. For those who remember, his was of the opinion that Lishma is more of a cognitive type of Lishma. I'm learning for the sake of understanding Torah concepts, something along those lines. And he was biographically the head, the Rosh Yeshiva, started the famed Volozhin Yeshiva, and was one of the first yeshiva, started the yeshiva movement in the subsequent 19th century. So Rav Chaim Volozhin died 200 years ago this week. So on this Mishnah, on this Brisa, discussing what does it mean that the whole world is worth it for this person who's learning, he has the following comment. He writes, "Velo od," you can see it here in the middle, "Ella shekol ha'olam kulo kedai hu lo, ki im rega achas haya nifsak divrei Torah mikol ha'olam me'oskeh v'shomreha, hayu shamayim va'aretz nehafachim l'tohu v'avohu." So here's the statement. If there's 1 second where Torah would cease to be learnt by those, or I guess it depends here what you how you understand this phrase here, me'oskeha v'shomreha, those who are enveloping themselves, dealing with it, learning it, but shomreha also means protecting it, So perhaps that refers to more of a keeping it from a mitzvah perspective. But let's just go with the idea of learning for now, because I think that's how most people understand it, right? If Torah is not learnt for 1 second, the whole world would basically cease to exist. K'mosh Amru Chazal. So here he quotes the Gemara in Adarim, and here's what I was alluding to Freda, to see if this is exactly what the Gemara was saying. I'll leave you to be the judge. But he quotes this Gemara in Adarim, which we're about to see, based on the pasuk that says "Im lo brisi yomam," it's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. We'll have to see if that's what the pasuk actually means as well. "Chuko shemayim baretz lo samti." Basically, if it wasn't for this covenant, I would not have created the world. "V'gam harakia shalgabe roshe achayos bechlal." It's not just this world, but sort of the metaphysical world as well. Has to do with the divine angelic world as well. Might be involved, it would cease to exist. So now the message for us would be, if I'm learning Torah, so what does that mean in our Mishnah, that the whole world is sort of created for this person? Well, it could literally be that this is what it means, that you are literally holding up the entire world through your learning. If nobody else is learning, and you are the only one, and you stopped, right? If you look at it from a negative perspective, the world would collapse into nothingness. But you learning Torah Lishma have the ability to maintain the entire world through your learning. So that's the idea that Rav Chaim Volozhiner pointed out. And again, there's some traction to it. I believe it's sort of a famed statement in the yeshiva world to emphasize the importance of Talmud Torah, which that nobody could disagree with. The question is whether or not the Gemara says that, or that's what the pasuk in Yirmiyahu actually means. So we'll just spend a moment looking at the Gemara. The Gemara says, and whether or not that's what our Brisa means, which I guess is more important for us locally in terms of what the Brisa is saying. Does this literally mean that the whole world depends on the learning of Torah, and without Torah, the world would cease to exist? So here's the Gemara. The Gemara says, and this is in the Darim 32a, Davar Acher, you have it here in the Hebrew, in the Aramaic and the English, Gedola. So first the Gemara talks about, the context is Bris Mila. Gedola Mila Sheshekula Keneged Kol HaMitzvah Shebetorah. So this is something that the Gemara Chazal often do, is they'll say, you know, this mitzvah is considered equal to all other mitzvahs. Basically, there's a few that are on the top of the hierarchy of importance. So here, Mila gets the tip of the hat at this point, that Mila is shkula keneged kol mitzvos, it's equal to all the other mitzvos, as it says, Shetoshnamar al ki al pi advar me'ela, the pasuk in Exodus says, for according to these words, I made a covenant with you and with Israel. So the concept of bris covenant, which isn't exactly bris mila, but the understanding of the Gemara is covenant here refers to circumcision, to bris mila. But then the Gemara says, alternatively, davar acher gedola mila she'il mole mila lo niskaimu shamayim va'aretz. Alternatively, great is the mitzvah of circumcision, and if not for circumcision, heaven and earth would not have been established, as it is stated, if my covenant be not with day and night. So this is the pasuk in Yirmiyahu that Rav Chaim Volozhiner was referring to. So the pasuk is, if my covenant be not with day and night, I would not have appointed the ordinances of heaven and earth. So without this covenant, without this bris, I would not have created the world. So that shows that how important bris mila is, that the world would not have been created if it not for the mitzvah of bris mila. So if you just pay careful attention here, at least the way it's translated here by Safaria, this is not the same exact thing. Forget about that we're talking about bris mila for a second and not Torah, which we'll talk about in a second. This is not saying the same exact thing as if somebody stopped for a second doing bris mila, the world would cease to exist. The way the Gemara is understanding it is that the world was created with bris mila in mind. If it wasn't for this bris, this covenant, here we're referring to that as bris mila, then Hashem would not have God would not have created the world. That's not saying the same thing as the world would cease to exist. It's at the time of creation, this intention was that bris mila is so important, and if for not that bris mila, then God is saying, I would not have created the world in the first place. And that's not the same thing as the world will be destroyed and cease to exist if not for for Bris Milah. Then the Gemara, for our purposes, transitions and says, this opinion that says that this Pasuk in Yirmiyahu was talking about Bris Milah, that God would not have created the world if it wasn't for this covenant of Bris Milah, the Gemara says, Upliga de Rabbi Eliezer. Now on the second page of the source sheet, the Amar, Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, Gedola Torah. It is Torah, how great Torah is, Ilmale Torah lonis kaimu shamayim va'aretz. That if it wasn't for Torah, the world, again here translated, would not have been established. As the Pasuk says, the same Pasuk, Shemrim lo brisi yomam v'layla chukah shamayim va'aretz lo samti. I would not have, if my covenant be not with day and night, I would not have appointed the ordinances of heaven and earth. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the covenant that exists day and night is the Torah, as it says, you should contemplate it day and night. So what you have here is a debate within the Gemara is what does the word bris, covenant, mean within the Psukim? Does it mean the bris, covenant of Bris Milah, or does it mean bris, covenant of Torah, which is also referred to as a bris, a covenant? For our purposes, one way of understanding this is that it means that the world was created with Torah in mind. If it wasn't for Torah, God would not have created the world. That itself is a not a strange reading, as it were. I mean, that's a pretty embedded tradition of Chazal, the importance of Torah within creation, but that's not the same thing as saying that the world would be destroyed if we did not learn Torah. I will also point out that even within the Gemara, it doesn't say learning, right? It says keeping, I'm not sure, it says Ilmalei Torah, if it wasn't for Torah. It doesn't say Ilmalei Talmud Torah, the learning of Torah, which sort of gets us back to what's perhaps an ambiguity within the words here of Rav Chaim Volozhin, and if we can do a little bit more research here. You know, he cross-references here to what he talks about in Nefesh HaChaim Shar Dalad Perichav Heis. Maybe that's a good idea to look that up. But within the words on their own, he says Oskeh Vishomreha, which isn't necessarily the same thing as learning per se, although that's definitely how it's interpreted. Yeah, Evelyn, you're on mute.
I tried to join last week, but I was kind of boarding the plane from the trip back here. But in any event, so I don't know whether this was, but I remember learning years ago that, you know, and when I see this, you know, Chukot Shamayim V'Aretz Lo Samti, so Hashem could have made the world where everybody was on the same time zone. I mean, that would have been in the realm of possibility for him. But the fact that he made the world where there's always time zones that can learn Torah, that we don't have to learn Torah at 3 o'clock in the morning. There's always somebody else where it's 10 o'clock in the morning at that point, and they can be learning Torah. And
So that's what Frey, you're boarding the plane is a good enough excuse. And don't worry, we had you covered. The shiur was still going on, so the world is still here. But you know, that's Freda brought that up, and that's why in that context I said I'll look it up and you know, bring the sources to show it them for this week. But that idea that you're saying is based on this idea of Rav Chaim, right? So that I believe, meaning the source of that, you know, time zone chiddush is that, you know, so now we have Torah learning 24/7, and otherwise the world would be destroyed. All I'm saying, again, it's a beautiful idea, and I'm not debating the importance of Torah study and the beauty of it happening at all points in time. The only question that I'm raising, and I don't have a firm answer, maybe I don't have the the right to ask this question, but I've seen it asked before, is that it's one reading of this Gemara that isn't necessarily what the Gemara is saying. Again, it's sort of silly on some level to disagree with an idea that's promoting Torah learning. I'm not de-promoting Torah learning. I'm just questioning on some level whether or not this is what the pshat of the Gemara is, or the pshat of what our Mishnah is of lo od ela shekol olam kulo kedai hu lo, is that you are sort of sustaining the entire world, and without that, it would be destroyed. I just don't. I guess we'll never know, because we always have time zones, and hopefully people will always be learning, so we don't have to do an experiment to see what happens. But from an intellectual, I guess, history perspective slash, you know, trying to understand the sources on their level, there's just interesting things to think about as to whether or not this is literally what it means. Doesn't mean it's not true, but what if this is what literally the Brisa here means and or what that Gemara means. Okay, so with that being said, let us go to the next section, which is right over here. If you go back to our Brisa, the number six is Malbashto Anava Viyira. The Torah clothes him in humility and reverence. So what's humility and reverence in context of Torah Lishma? So two excerpts here, which I think are pretty interesting, as well as getting to the word choice here. It's a little bit strange, or at least poetic on some level. Malbashto, it clothes him in humility and reverence. What is the why use that terminology of malbashto? It clothes you in humility and reverence. So if you look here, excerpted from the Masifta, it says Bibera Hebdel Bein Anavalir. So number one is, what's the difference between humility and reverence? So quotes here Matisyo Hayitzari Sha'anava Hi Hakaras Chesrono Vishifluso Biyachas Librios. So humility is the recognition and understanding of my lack, my shortcomings in connection to others. V'lachein hu nichna v'shafel. So I sort of have a humility stance towards others that I know I'm lacking. That's humility. V'yira hi hakaras shiflus ha'adam v'chestron kochosav ha'nefashios b'yachas ha'kadosh baruch hu. The reverence, the awe, the fear, if you want to translate it that way, is the recognition of that same lowliness in relationship to God. So the way he understands the difference between anava, humility, and yira, awe, reverence, is that one is ben adam lechavero, it's my standing and the understanding of myself in connection to others, and yira is my understanding of my relationship to God, in both focusing on my shortcomings. Now, how that relates to ideas of self-esteem and all that, I'm going to push off for now. We've spoken about that in the past. But having I don't think it's too crazy to say that having a healthy sense of awareness of shortcomings and weaknesses is not inherently problematic. It can become problematic if done in an unhealthy way. So there is value to a healthy sense of humility and reverence, both in terms of our standing towards others as well as our standing towards God. Then he quotes here the Chassid Yaivitz, Rav Yosef Yaivitz, who writes, Sha'anava, what's the difference between, again, anava and yira? So he says, anava, humility, is greater than yira, this reverence. Sha'anava, Hisha adam makir shiflus atzmol mul gadlus haboris. So he explains it the opposite. So the first opinion we saw, Rabbi Tzitzhiyahu Hayitzari, was that anava is between me and somebody else, and yira was between me and God. The Yaivitz explains, no, anava is between me and God. That's going to keep me in a state of sinlessness. So he assumes that the essence of sin comes from arrogance, and this humility in relationship to God will help me to avoid that. But yira is shiyara migadlus habore. About eno misbonen b'shiflus atzmo. Yira is to understand how great and awesome God is, but there's no self-awareness as to our own shortcomings and lack. V'im yis'alim imenu tziur haromus l'rega echad. And because of that, because your fear of sin is only coming from an acknowledgement of the greatness of God, if for some reason that greatness of God is absent for a moment, alul lachto, it will lead to sin, because I don't have that internal check to be aware of my own Anava, the loneliness, the internal loneliness, lowliness. Valkein ne'amar ekev anava yiras Hashem. Kolamar sha'yira hi pechusa me'anava k'mo sha'ekev hu tachtes agav. So he says that therefore, again, in his formulation of this hierarchy, anava is better than yira because anava is more of a self person. I would say an internalized personality trait versus the Yira, which is an externalized understanding of God, which according to his understanding would be more adaptable, changeable, flexible, less consistent and constant, and therefore has more of a chance of a leading to sin if you forget your place. Then the last interesting point on this is the Pirkei Moshe, where he gives a third different explanation. He says, "Kashanava va'yira heim hamidos ha'makinos es ha'adam lema'alos sheneshnu behemshach habraisa." So interesting in terms of the place of these two in the context of the rest of the list. So if you remember, just going back up for a second, we have here, we did one through five last time. Now we're doing six. So Anava and Yira, humility and reverence. So the Pirkei Moshe says that these two, this number six here, Ma'abashto Anava Yira, sets the stage for the next, 10 or so. So just keep that in mind, meaning that makes this, gives it more importance. It's not just one set of many. It's actually foundational to the rest of what we're about to read. So he says, again, going back here, Pirkei Moshe Kasav, Shanava Vayira Him Hamidos Ha Makinos Es Ha Adam Lamailos Shen Nishnu Behemshach HaBraisa. These are the traits that help you acquire the rest of what we're about to learn about. And then he says, Vahanava Hi, so what are they? Hanava Hi Ha Hachana L'chol Hamidos HaTovos. Anava, humility, is actually the starting point, it's the preparation, it's the sort of the underpinnings of all the other great traits. Kevan she'inyana hachnas hachomer el hasechel. So the way he understands humility is that it is the ability of, using medieval terminology, that it is the way that our physicality can be subsumed or subservient to our intellect, to our seichel, umitakenes es hamidos haraos, and it's able to fix and hold in check the bad character traits. So that's a pretty high standing for anava, and there is a lot of discussion about this as to the anava, humility, being a pinnacle type of character trait, the all-encompassing trait, according to Chazal, which is interesting to think about for a different time, in contrast to some of the character and ethical philosophy of Aristotle and some of the Greeks, where anava, humility, was not definitely not at the pinnacle. If anything, it actually might have been a non-important trait, almost the magnanimity and sort of the, I don't want to call it arrogance because Aristotle wouldn't like arrogance either, but the honor and what you might call self-respect and dignity of that somebody might hold of themselves was a very important character trait in ancient Greek philosophy, which is one of the reasons why the Rambam goes and says that when it comes to anava, humility, we don't follow Aristotle's middle path, which he says for everything except for anger, which we've spoken about in the past, you follow the middle path. Anger and humility you don't, because, as we've said in other Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos, have a ma'od ma'od shval ruach, right? Be very, very humble, so you go to the extreme. So that humility as a pinnacle, quintessential trait within the understanding of Judaism goes to this Pirkei Moshe, right? I'm bringing this in to sort of prove his point, that anava can be understood as the most important trait within a Judaic framework of character. So then that's anava. What's yira? So by yira mitakenes es kol hadvarim harayim hatuyim b'seichel. fear, awe, reverence, however you want to translate it exactly, helps by fixing all of the negative traits, character, qualities that are related to intellect. Kimo, hira haver b'chol mitzvahs lo saseh, any type of improper thinking of sin. So all of that is fixed by yira. Yira is the counter to inappropriate thinking. Od perish, that's one, that's anava and yira on one level. And then he says another explanation, od perish anava mitakenes es hakas, bringing anger back into this. Humility can actually help with anger. Sheba mitzad hachomrios sheba adam. Anger comes from more of the physicality part of this, is his personality structure, that anger comes from physicality. You might want to say anger comes from ego on some level. And yira helps with ta'ava, with desire. Shayidei yira sachet nizr shlo lehamshach achar ataiva, fear of sin helps counter desire. So if you look at anger as being a quintessential problem, which comes from chomer, which comes from material, physical, ego, however you want to, again, exactly formulate that, anava, the humility, comes to counteract that. And then taiva, which is another big source of sin, desire, lusts, etc., is counterbalanced by yira. So these two are, in the Pirkei Moshe's formulation, are really, really important qualities that are going to underpin both the rest of the Brisa, as he started off saying, that these are going to help us understand the rest of the list, but also stand at the top of the hierarchy in terms of how it shapes our ability to serve God appropriately and avoid sinning. One last point here on this humility, reverence discussion, and that goes to that word choice of malbashto, against sort of poetic language here. It envelops you, it enwraps you, it clothes you. So what does that mean, that a trait envelops you? So you can understand it on some level on that poetic realm. Maybe it doesn't need exact full analysis, but it does give us a trace to get creative a little bit. So when you think of a malbush, a clothing, so what, and you now sort of use it as a metaphor for traits, so where can that bring you, right? If you want to be a creative interpreter, where can it bring you to think of traits as clothing? So what you can in theory do is say that, so what do you do with clothing, right? What do you do with a jacket? So sometimes you take it on, sometimes you take it off, right? So if you use that metaphor of clothing as, you know, almost as to help us understand the traits, then, well, the reason why it's strange, let me put it this way. The reason why it's strange is because if you think about character, you usually think about character as being internal. It's not something that I take on or take off. It's not something that I can change or adapt based on setting necessarily. This is who I am. This is what I'm supposed to be. So if you're going to use malbush of clothing and think about it in terms of taking on, taking off, then you might have a message of situational flexibility, as it were, when you're supposed to use humility, when you're not supposed to use humility, when you're supposed to use yira, fear, reverence, and when you're not supposed to. So if you look here, there's two interesting spins on this. On the bottom of this, he quotes here the Lechem Shemayim. She'etzem ha'davar she'esh bo anava v'yira, when it comes to humility and fear, davar pashad hu ve'ein sarach l'kasvo. And these are pretty... they're so quintessential, they're not even necessary to state on some level. Kevin Shator lo niknas below midos. You can't get Torah without these two, without yira and hanava, right? It's so obvious that these are two important traits within a Torah framework. The whole chiddush hatanu shemidos elu dveikus bo kilvush velo yifredu. So what if they're so obvious? Why state it here as part of this sort of glorified explanation of what Torah is all about? why put it here? So he says that the whole chiddush, the whole reason why it's here, is because of the language of levush. So how does he understand the language of levush, that it's enclosed? He understands it that it means that it's totally embedded in you. It can't be taken off. It's an interesting way of reading it. If you would have asked me, I think the next reading sounds more, would have emphasized what, you know, it's sort of the counterpoint, and we'll analyze it in a second. Let's just read it first. So he says, Amnam b'maor einayim v'shem Rabbi Yisrael miplotsk, kasav lahefech miperetz, the exact opposite. Shekavana satana she'anavet tzricha lios eitzel adam kemalbush. Humility, he doesn't talk about yira. Yira is a little bit more controversial. But humility should be something like a clothing to us. She'le'itim poshtel. Sometimes you got to take it off. Most of the time you have it on. Yeah, but sometimes you got to take it off. Kigon she'tzarcha adam limchos b'porke ol u'mishtamet mikach b'taino shel anava. Right? Sometimes there's necessity to stand up for yourself, for Torah. There's a good reason to not just be pushed over, and it would be inappropriate to say, I can't stand up here, I'm too humble, right? So no, at that point, most of the time you're wearing your humility vest, at that point you take off your humility vest, and you say, no, then you have to take off the humility, and there's a lot of interesting discussion about this as well in some Kabbalistic terminology. In Hasidus, sometimes you see gaiva de kedusha, a holy arrogance, as it were. Sometimes there's a place for that, which leads to what would be a more dialectic of character, where there's some situations where character A would be used, maybe 95% of the situations character A should be used. But there are some times where the opposite needs to be taken into account as well. And there's Gemaras that seem to indicate that as well. So any Talmud Chacham who doesn't have a little bit, I think it's one-eighth of one-eighth, the Gemara's terminology is of a little bit of arrogance, gaiva is going to is going to fail. Meaning we need a little bit of that backbone. So I like that. Meaning from a metaphorical perspective of that it's a malbush. It's something that you take on, take off. I'm not exactly sure what the first opinion's point is. Meaning if you're saying this is so obvious that it doesn't need to be said, the only thing that it needs to be said is to say that this is so embedded that you can't take it off at any point in time, then why use the terminology? I mean, that seems almost counterintuitive. Why use the terminology of malbush, of clothing? Because clothing, again, is something that, at least the way I envision it, is something that is as a tool, is something you take on and take off. It's not something that's always that you're wearing unless they wore the same jacket and never took it off. Maybe that's different ways of how we use clothing. But interesting discussion regardless. And at the very least, you see the importance of humility and the importance of reverence to the Torah, the Torah learning and Torah living. Okay, so what's interesting as we now head off into the rest of the list, and this is something I think we alluded to last week, but I'll make it explicit. It refers to what we just said as well as to what we're about to say. And that is, if you think about just what the Braisa is saying, right? This is somebody who's learning Torah Lishma, and assuming we read the Braisa as that if you learn Torah Lishma, you get many things. One of those things that you're getting is malbashto anava v'yira. So meaning, is it that I'm learning Torah Lishma, so I'm getting rewarded with humility and awe and reverence? That's my reward? Or is it something that, and I think Rabbi Shalona, you alluded to something along those lines last week as well, is that no, it's that through, I mean, these are the traits that helped me get to that Torah Lishma. So meaning, is it causative that these are traits that helped me get there? Or is it a reward that once I get there, this is what I get. It's hard to say the latter completely, because we can't imagine somebody being able to learn Torah Lishma without some level of these character traits. So at the very least, you know, minimally, you would, I think you would have to say, is that these are traits that you have developed on your own. You learn Torah Lishma, and now as Torah Lishma, if you want to look at it at this now as a reward, it's almost like you level up, right? You have a, to use a gaming metaphor, which may not be the right metaphor for the crowd, but either way, right? When you work on something on your own and you get there, you earn it, and then you sort of get rewarded by doubling or basically increasing those things that you have already started to attain on your own. So it's both something you've done on your own and something you get rewarded to as a bonus from that Torah Lishma. I think that would be one way of looking at it. I would be averse to the understanding that you don't have those things. You learn Torah Lishma, and now you get them as a reward, because I don't think you can get there without these. Okay, so now we are going to, let's just review the next one. U'machsharto lios tzadik v'chassid v'yashar v'neman. So it's interesting in terms of the numbering here. In theory, I could have done each one of these as a separate listing, because they're, even though from a sentence perspective they're put in one sentence, they seem to be four different types of things. They're sort of different, just four different descriptions. What is it? So I'm equipped, machsharto, an interesting language choice. Machsharto becomes equipped. You become, I guess, susceptible to be righteous, tzaddik, chassid, which is pious, yashar. Say it again.
Machshira oto.
Yeah.
It prepels him to be.
Yeah, it propels, it makes you susceptible. Again, equips might be. That's what how they translate it here. So again, tzaddik, righteous, chassid, pious, yashar, upright, neman, trustworthy. So now, there's a fascinating document I'm about to share with you, a different screen, that I think encapsulates the complicatedness of, and I think a good complicatedness of learning anything in depth. Right, so by now, if most of you have been with us here for a good 4 years or so, or maybe a little bit less, but right, you can learn Perkei Avos in, like, there's a custom to learn Perkei Avos every week in between Pesach and Shavuos, right? So that actual custom is to finish all of Perkei Avos within 6 weeks by reading it for like a half hour every Shabbos afternoon. You read one perek, right? So if you can imagine, all of Perkei Avos is finished within, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours, right? And again, this is our fifth year, and we haven't finished yet. And these are hour-long shirim. Part of that is because you can just read this sentence of be righteous, pious, upright, and trustworthy, and move on, right? Okay, I somewhat get what it means. I think it's, you know, these are important things. Torah allows you to become, or equips you to become, righteous, pious, upright, trustworthy. And go to number six, right, what we just spent a good half hour on, right? Malbashto anava v'yira. Again, you can just read through that. Torah clothes you in humility and reverence, right? But once you start delving in, you see, okay, there's a dispute. What does anava mean? What does yira mean? What's more important? What's the relationship between them? Why use this word choice? Why use that word choice? And then you learn so many things from that. So that, with that introductory comment, look at this. Look at this graphic. Okay, so this.
I want to say one thing. It's the difference between daf yomi and learning Gemara.
Yeah, on some level, for sure. So now this is a chart taken from, again, the Masifta, which is, to be honest, without the Masifta, which I've quoted directly, many times, indirectly. It's you know, the source of many, 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 if not every single one of these shiurim, helps me, sort of gives me the places to look and to bring out the sources more in depth. So this is taken from them. They usually don't do this. I don't know why they decided to do it for this one, but they give a graph of these four words, and I'll try to, first I'll give you this whole page, okay? And I'll show you what this whole page is. So on the top here, you have our four words, tzaddik, chassid, yashar, and neman. Those are our four words that we're dealing with. And then you have here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And they could have done more. 15 different commentaries on how each one understands each one of these words slightly differently. And there's some overlap. It's not like you can have everybody says something fundamentally, mind-blowingly differently from each other. There's obviously some overlap. But these four words, which run-of-the-mill words we probably don't think twice about generally, when you go into the commentaries and you start analyzing, you have here, you know, somebody could do the math, 15 times 4, 60, okay, that wasn't too bad, different possibilities as to what all these words mean. So now, we're not going to go through all 60 of these, but I wanted to give you a vision, this sort of, I think it's a nice visual graphic that sums up what we're trying to do here on some level. But let's just explore some of these. So if you look here, so who does he quote? These are all Rishonim and Achronim. What is it? Tzaddik. So tzaddik, righteous. Let's just go down some of these lists here. So he quotes here, what does it mean? Righteous, or of Matisyahu Hayitzari, Hashokel Esmasav Visotzaos Hayotzos Mehem Imhem Tovim. This is an interesting explanation. When you say righteous, you say, okay, it means a good guy, righteous, does mitzvot. No, he says that it means that you are able to weigh your actions and your results to make sure that what you do, the consequences, the outcomes of what you do, are positive, are effective. Od Perish gives another explanation. Sheshokel b'masav es toeles atzmo biyachas l'toeles chavero. You're able to calculate what I do as to balance the benefit that it has for myself in relationship to the benefit or lack of benefit that it would have to my friend. Same and flip as well. So meaning what I'm doing, I can weigh, it's going to be helpful for me, helpful for my friend, great. And sort of oversimplifying it. Helpful for me, damaging to my friend. Well, how helpful to me, how damaging to my friend? Got to figure that out in order to make my decision. Or damaging to me, helpful for my friend. Got to figure out how damaging to me, how helpful for my friend in order to weigh that decision. So that's what he understands tzaddik as. Again, very interesting explanation, not necessarily what we would have came away from on our own. And similarly, in terms of Hanas Avera Kenegative Seda, something we saw in the fourth chapter of Perkei Avos, to be able to calculate the pleasure that I get from a sin, that short-term pleasure of whatever it might be, against the long-term consequences of that, as well as the Hefsed Mitzvah, the lack of not doing a mitzvah against the benefit I might get from doing that mitzvah. Okay, so very, again, non-standard explanation of what tzaddik means. More standard explanations, you know, Pirkei Moshe here says, b'masav, I'm righteous in my actions, like I do good things, she'oset stakos. Rashi, Ravan, Rav Simcha Mivitri, holich betumo ve'eno osa avel, I don't sin, I walk in a straight path, I'm sort of straightforward type of person. And then you have a similar explanations from the next two as well. And then another explanation, holech b'derech haim tzayis, getting back to the Rambam, the middle path. So Rabbeinu Shem Tov and the Mili D'Avos explain that tzaddik means middle path, which is, again, an interesting spin on what it means. Merkavos and Mishnah, same thing, middle path, Abarbanel, Farisol, Osei Marbrios, Kishuras Hadin. follow, you know, interact with people in a straightforward way. That's tzaddik, you know, sort of straightforward, fair. Some formulated.
Tzaddik,
right? Bein adam is it bein adam? So some look at it as bein adam l'chavero, interpersonal. Some look at it as here the Tiferes also says bein adam l'makom. One explanation says kovesh es yitzro, means I'm able to control my self-control. Again, Ruach Haim, same idea. Misgaber al yitzro, veino over midercha, I overcome my yetzer. Finally, Maharal, I do the appropriate thing, even though it's not necessarily obligatory. Whatever. Either way, there you go. You have it. You know, 10 to 15 different explanations of what tzaddik means, and you thought you knew what tzaddik means. Now, the next one, and this will do less, I think you get the point, but just to give you a little bit of a taste with chassid, pious. So one possibility of chassid comes from gemilus chassadim. I'm doing chassid, good actions, helping other people out. Another possible explanation of chassid is ose lifnim mishuras adin, to go above and beyond what's required of me. So tzaddik means necessarily to do what the, you know, the required, just, you know, the maybe to some extent the minimum of what I'm supposed to do. And chesed means to go to an extreme, to go above and beyond what I'm required to do, would be one way of understanding chesed. And that seems to be a running theme here with the next four as well. Lefnim Mishuras Adim, Lefnim Mishuras Adim, Lefnim Mishuras Adim. Again, going above and beyond required. Similarly, when it comes to character, Notel Ketzei HaTov, going a little bit to the side of good, not just staying in the middle. That's tzaddik. Tzaddik is middle. Chassid is a little bit to the good side, a little bit to the good extreme. And that seems to be a running theme as well. And then there's the same distinction here in Tiferes Yisrael, who said that tzaddik is bein adam makom, says chassid is bein adam chavero. So it depends on the relationship we're talking about, between person to person, between person and God. Okay, what is yashar? So straight. So again, the simple, without getting too complicated explanation, as the Maseches Kala Rabsi says, yashar derech, straight path. We know what it means, just basic language. You don't have to get too complicated, and now we get more complicated. So what does it mean, straight? Daito yashara, I have straight thinking. I get to go to the, I think truth, and I follow that truth. I'm able to judge with truth. I do the right thing. Some say it's similar to chassid, so that's an interesting option that, you know, maybe there's synonyms here. Even though we're four things, maybe chassid and yashar are basically saying the same thing. It's a possibility. There could be redundancy if you want to go that way. Maybe it's, again, explanation of chassid. Bedaito, there seems to be more of a running theme that yashar is with thinking. Right, so there might be behaviors, might be tzaddik, behavior or character might be chassid. Yashar is thinking. So you could look at it from that distinction as well, in terms of what we're talking about. Okay, and then let's do one more here. Shetivo kvar eino nimshach l'ra. The Rav Chaim Volozhiner, is, again, his yurtzeit, so it's worth quoting him here, references it more to a character-based concept, that I'm not even pulled to do anything wrong. It's not like I have a desire to do it and then I stop myself. I don't even have a desire to do something wrong. That's how he understands what yashar is. And then finally, neman, trustworthy, neman ruach. It's a little bit of a vague term as well. So what does it mean here? Let's give some explanations. Kiem bideosav uve emunaso velo mishana osam. So here, the Rav Matisyahu Hayitzari understands it as being committed, consistent, authentic on some level. This is who I am, is what I believe. I'm not gonna necessarily change that. Believe to stay away from bad, trustworthy, umnos here. Okay, I don't know if that means, again, trustworthy, doesn't lie, ain't a mishaker. And then just do this one because it's interesting as well in terms of that question of redundancy. So Rav Yosef Nachmias says, what is Naaman? Zeu chassid. That's the same thing as a pious person. The kaflu b'milo shonos. It's just, again, it's synonyms. V'yeshom rim yashar b'inyanei mamonos. Means Naaman means you're trustworthy, believable when it comes to money, monetary issues. And you're not going to cheat somebody. And then we'll close with Rav Chaim Volozhin again, where he says here, Rav Chaim, inyan kiyum t'midi v'chozek shikabal siyat d'shmaishol yuchal ha'yitzer lachshilo. Consistency, grit, follow through, strength. That's what it means. What means yosher? Okay, so again, nice little excerpt here of all the possibilities of what tzaddik means, what chassid means, what yosher means, what neman means. All these things are related to learning. That getting back to our framing from before, these are things that might help lead to better learning, but also are things that you get rewarded with when you learn Torah Lishma. Okay, so I think I can't go too slow here because this price is going to take us forever. Let's see if we can get one more in here. Yeah, let's do one more. So the next, so far we've done, last week we did the first five, now we've done six and seven. Let's just do eight. We'll close with this and save the rest for next week or next week and 2 weeks. Umerachto min hachet. It keeps you far from sin. Okay, so again, same sort of questions in terms of, does that mean that I stay far from sin, so that gets me to Torah Lishma, or Torah Lishma helps keep me away from sin? Isn't that sort of also redundant? If I'm a tzaddik, chassid, yashar, neman, doesn't that sort of definitionally mean that I'm staying away from sin? So is this whole concept redundant? Word choice, rachto minachet, keeps me far away from sin. Does that mean I can't sin? I don't sin? What's the language of staying away? So you have a bunch of different explanations here.
Because there is the
yirah. Right. Right. So Rishonim is pointing out that it relates not just to the previous one of tzaddik, chassid, yashar, neman, but also to tubak, mabash to anava v'yira. So yira, fear, awe, reverence, is a, you know, redundant, synonymous with marachto minachet. So if you want to just read it as it's okay to be redundant, then fine. You know, it just means you stay away from sin. End of story. You know, go finish the brisa so you can, you know, finish everything and, you know, finish the whole chapter in 30 minutes or so. But if you want to sort of analyze, again, is it redundant? What's the language of richuk? And what the message that we could take away from here? So let's do the shorter one first. The Teferis Yisrael here says, Merachto menachet, da'afta amrinan shemechsharto lios tzadik, even though we already said the previous clause that I'm going to be righteous, so isn't it redundant? Hainu shia ben nafsho hachanos l'chach. So he says, so what does it mean in our previous clause? Our previous clause of mechsharto equips me. So being equipped with something doesn't mean that you actually follow through on it, right? So it's sort of, I have the tendency to do it. I have the ingredients to do it, but it doesn't necessarily that I'm going to do it. So it's not necessarily redundant to say I'm equipped and then I do it, right? So this is the follow through. So you know, that seems to be in the direction of how he's doing, right? That's only that you have the equipment to do it. You're prepared to do it. Aval dayin lo shaminan. Nobody said anything as of yet. Heyach yisnaig. How I'm actually going to act kishiyavol l'nisayon minyanei chitzonim, when I'm actually tempted to do something. You know, there's an external temptation that tries to get me. How am I going to act? So I have the tools to do it, but what am I going to actually do? So kishiyizdame bimkomo tachet. If I get to a place that's tempting, there's sin all around me. So that's why lahachi kamar hacha umarach tomeached. So it keeps me far away from sin. What does that mean? Rotzelomar timnehu lavo bimkomos hanisayon. It's an interesting read. He says that that the learning of Torah prevents me from actually going into places that are tempting. So now, this is an important point worth highlighting on just a practical level, and we've spoken about this plenty of times, situational control, right? Our best bet to have self-control is to avoid the battle with self-control in the first place. And that's what Marachto Min HaChet is getting at, according to the Tiferes Yisrael, is staying far away from places that can cause sin. And this makes sense on a logical level. Somebody who's learning Torah Lishma presumably is not spending, hopefully, again, it's not a guarantee necessarily, and that's important to point out as well, but you're enveloping yourself and grounding yourself in places and things that you're doing that are not inherently enticing or tempting. So that's just an important practical takeaway. This is a theoretical question, and I think this will help us sort of lay the seeds for next week as well, is, are these guarantees, right? If you learn Torah Lishma, you will not sin, or in this case, you will stay far away from places of sin. So I don't like to look at things in general as guarantees, because there's always too many exceptions to make guarantees for things. But the secondary question here is, what does he mean by this? Timnehu lavo bimkomos hanisayon. Again, is it this sort of natural thing that if I'm Torah Lishma person, I will naturally stay away from these types of temptations? Or is there, you could also understand this as sort of like a metaphysical reward, a divine assistance, that God will not put these things in front of you to tempt you. So either one, I think, is a fair reading, but it gets to the core as to what our Mishnah, our Braisa, is saying. Is our Braisa saying, if you learn Torah Lishma, you get rewarded with these things as a divine again, not guarantee, because we don't like guarantees because there's too many exceptions, but a divine add-on, these are things that God's going to now help you with, and or is it just, this is the natural consequence of embodying somebody who's Torah Lishma, is that it'll keep you away from these types of enticing situations. I think either one is a fair read. We'll close with one more source here. Merachta ben Achid is Medrash Shmuel. So he says, Kasha, same question. We already called you a Chassid Yashar Neman. Pshita. That's interesting, just a quirk here. The Tiferes Yisrael, right, we had four things in the previous clause. It says, Tzadik, Chassid, Yashar, Neman. The Tiferes Yisrael, who we just saw, says, you already said he's a Tzadik, so why are you telling me he's staying away from Chet? Medrash Shmuel says, you already said he's a Chassid Yashar Neman, why are you telling me he's staying away from a Chet? It's ironic on some level that they both chose different words to focus on. Right? It's almost like the Medrash Shmuel chooses three out of the four, leaves out Tzadik. Tiferes Yisrael chooses Tzadik and leaves the other three out. That's somewhat of an oddity here. But again, so the Medrash Shmuel says, we already said Chassid Yashar Neman. Of course it's Richuk Menachet. And it might have to do with how they explained what all those four were. So you can go back and check that up. But he says, V'Avshar Lomar, one explanation. Shemash Chas Merachta Menachet, HaKavana Al Chet Asher Kfar Asa. So it means sins you've already done. Kein Tzadik Baratz Asher Yaseh Tov Lo Yafta. Everybody has sinned, at least in the past. So by now that you got the Torah Lishma, we're saying you stay away from sin. That's obvious from the Yira, the Anava, the Chassid, the Yashar, the Tzaddik. You're not sinning anymore. You're good. Again, let's keep the caveat of guarantees out there. But you're good. So how does it say Merachto Menachet? It means Merachto from old sins. So that's a pretty interesting read here. So you're going to be protected from old sins. How are you protected from old sins? So again, you could read this in one of two ways. He reads it in at least on some level on a metaphysical way, dealing with things that we spoke about, when every time you sin, it creates this kategor, this sort of this prosecutor that follows you around. So now that prosecutor is going to sort of leave you alone. Merachto menachet. You can understand it on a sort of a psychological level, is that there's some level of cognitive, sort of leftovers from sins of our past. Our history is never totally gone from us. So merachto menachet might mean, yes, you're not going to sin because you're tzaddik, chassid, yashar, etc., but you've now also had this added bonus of your past sins won't haunt you on some level. Because you could read it metaphysically or psychologically. I think either one, again, could be a fair read here. And then he finally says one more, and we'll close with this. He says, "V'gam efshar lefarish u'merachta menachet kipshuto shelo yachta." You're not going to sin. V'hu kemo shamru chazal b'makom shabal yeshuva omdim ein tzadikim gemurim yichom la'amod. V'ayin shabal yeshuva yikra davka k'shetavol yidei oso aveira atzma ba'oso perk ba'oso isha ba'oso makom afal piken hu marchik es atzma ma'achet ish kezehu yoser chashuv mitzadik v'chazis. Now he's saying that it's actually a higher level than Chassid Tzaddik Yashar. So Chassid Tzaddik Yashar, now he throws in Tzaddik, but Chassid Tzaddik Yashar are people who don't sin. Great. Awesome. But now we're going to have a higher level of that you are tempted and you still don't sin. And it's almost the opposite read of the Tiferes Yisrael. Tiferes Yisrael from down here said, you know, stay away, don't be tempted, you know, far away from sin. Here he's saying it's that you've got into the same situation that maybe you've even sinned in the past, and now you're on a higher level because you're Baal Tshuva in the sense that you're not going to sin in that tempting situation. Okay, you do actually become midaber b'misha bali de'aveira v'nitzla mena shelo amar umarchik ha'chet b'menu rak amar umarachto minachet shekabanasha afilu she'achet mulchan mezuman lefanav hu yarchik atzmo minachet. Okay, so his reading of this, very different than Tiferes Yisrael, is that it doesn't say, is in the, our grammarians could double check him on this, but I'll trust him for now. Usually when grammar comes in, my mind just sort of goes blank a little bit. But he says marchik would mean stay, that the sin doesn't even come close to him. Marchakto means that it's there and it's sort of it's present, but then he's able to push it away. He's able to conquer his yetzer. Again, exact opposite learning of the Tiferes Yisrael, who said avoid that whole thing in the first place. Major Shmuel is throwing an alternative possibility here, that it means that even if you're tempted, you're able to have that self-control of Kovish as Yitzhar, and on some level, that's a higher level. Okay, so just two interesting opposite reads of what it means, Merachto Menachet, and how it relates to the other things that we read in the Brisa. Next time,
Rabbi, isn't that Rambam's exact definition of someone who's done tshuva, that he's in the exact same position and doesn't make the same sin again?
Yeah, that's what he's quoting here over here. That Baal tshuva yikra dafka kishtavli deoso aver asam bosa perak bosa isha bosa makam. That's almost a direct quote there from the Rambam in Mishnah Torah. Again, whether that is what merachto menachet means is a different question. So Tiferes Yisrael might agree that that's what a complete Baal Tshuva, you know, Tshuva Shlema is, doesn't necessarily mean that's what Merachto Menachet means. So Medrash Shmuel here is bringing in that idea to explain what this Brisa means. You could argue with that reference. But okay, either way, you see some fascinating intricacies within these few words. Next time we have some other very fascinating discussions here, just to prime you a little bit, especially with this one. You get counsel, sound knowledge, understanding, and strength. So as you can probably intuit already, you know, the commentaries are going to disagree as to what each one of these means. And the discussion that comes out of this, especially we'll see with the Abarbanel, has to do with Torah's ability, the learning of Torah Lishma's ability to impact other areas of life, not just fear and sin and Torah, but How does it impact my interactions with the outside world and the like? And the Abarbanel is one who interacted with the outside world biographically, that this Mishnah, this Brisa will lend not just some interesting ideas, but also almost lived experiences of the different commentaries and how they understand what's going on. So that's for next week. Okay, looks like we, Paula, do you still have a comment question?
Yes, a comment.
Yeah.
The proof that God loves the quality of humility is that he selected Moses, because Moses was, according to God, the most humble person that exists.
Yeah.
And selected him to lead the Jewish people.
100%. Good reference. So yeah, Moshe, that's a good proof. Moshe was the humblest. The Torah, lots of statements in Chazal about the benefits of humility. The Torah embodies humility. Har Sinai embodies humility. God embodies humility, right? The quintessential concept that God, in his greatness, lowers himself to help those who need help. That's the sort of the quintessential definition of humility, which doesn't mean low self-esteem, but it means help, the ability to despite being powerful and important and great, the ability to help others. Okay, let us close here. Thank you again to our sponsors, and we have a good week. We'll see you all next week.
Thank you,
Rabbi Schiffman. Everybody have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Till next time.
Thank you.